welcome to a new episode of the Between the Posts podcast. Today we will focus on Germany as we will analyze their Klassiker between Bayern Munich and Borussia Dortmund. My name is Erik Elias, with me here to discuss this match, also of Between the Posts, Jose Perez. Jose, welcome.
Hello, Erik, and hello, everyone. It's nice to be back in the Bundesliga covering what is usually supposed to be the biggest game in Bundesliga. If I am honest, I don't think that tactically speaking, this is the best game in the Bundesliga anymore. This was kind of a simple game to analyze.
Yeah, I think that's right. I do think we saw two of the best number nines in the world together, but I don't think these two teams are now the two best teams in Germany. I think we have another certain team from the East involved in that.
That is something definitely that we can talk a bit more later. But the one thing I will say for sure, I don't think they are the most tactically interesting games, but as we saw today, they haven't been lacking in goals lately.
No, not at all. And to be honest, I always enjoy when these two teams meet. More times than not, I really enjoy it. And that was the case today as well. Lineups. I will start with Bayern in there. We always call it a 4-2-3-1, but actually it's a 4-2-4 with Müller as the number 10 behind Lewandowski. Yeah, the problem has been a little bit in defense. There was a good newsletter from John Müller about this, that their defense is less good than last season. Also, their pressing has become a little bit less compact, I've noticed. Today, as I said, in their 4-2-4, Neuer, as always, in goal. Boateng and Alaba still centre-backs. They are playing with Süle at right-back and Davies still at the left-back. Double pivot, always Kimmich and Goretzka. Very nice balance. That's well done. And as the attackers, Müller behind Lewandowski, number 10 and 9. And on the wings, Sané on the right and Coman on the left. Serge Gnabry just came back from an injury, so he was not played. He played 25 minutes last weekend, so not fit enough to start. Maybe he would have started if he was fit. And they also miss Pavard, who's their normally starting right back, because he had the coronavirus. And also Douglas Costa is out and Corentin Tolisso is out. So nothing unusual there. I do think Bayern should be in the market for a right back this summer because Süle is not your usual right back. I think they have a guy called Bounassar who has not really been meeting the expectations. And yeah, if Bayman Pavard is injured or has the coronavirus, then they are immediately in trouble. So that's something to look out for. What about Dortmund, Jose?
Yes. So in the case of Dortmund, after Lucien Favre's departure, this second half of the season for Dortmund is basically a transition period while they wait for Marco Rose and company to take over the reins. And for now, basically interim coach Terzic, has made his team press more aggressively than before, but Dortmund are still not really a cohesive defensive structure. They're also not in a cohesive attacking structure. To be honest, right now, Dortmund is still very much a team of great individual quality, but not a team of great collective structure. So going into this game, the meaningful injuries, Axel Witsel is injured, Akanji is injured, Sancho was out at the last minute, Guerreiro was also out, Gio Reyna also out. So a few kind of meaningful injuries for them. And that did force some interesting changes for Terzic and Dortmund. So in previous games, Dortmund has been starting with either a 4-2-3-1 kind of shape or a 4-3-3. And this time we saw something completely different. So this time around, Terzic went out with a back three. So it was a block that when they were pressing, it was basically a 5-2-3 pressing. When they were defending deep, it was basically a 5-4-1 defensive block. So the goalkeeper right now, Marvin Hitz, the center-back trio was Sagado on the left, Hummels in the center, Emre Can on the right. The wing-backs, Nico Schulz replacing Guerreiro on the left, Meunier on the right, poor Meunier, we're going to talk a bit about him later. The double pivot, Daoud and Delaney, this time Jude Bellingham, who I kind of liked him, was benched. And then the forwards, then we had Royce and Hazard playing alongside Haaland, the cyborg, the striker, and their most decisive player.
Yeah, he's quite a good player, I think, Haaland. We'll talk about him surely later. Yeah, about the formation, Jose. So we know Favre played 4-2-3-1 in his first season, switched it over to 3 at the back and kind of stick to that. But I think this team has played with 4 at the back, has played with 5 at the back. Why do you think it was 5-2-3 today? What was that sense in that?
So I think there are two main reasons for that. One was that having kind of Meunier and Schultz as fullbacks was a bit dangerous. They're not the greatest defensive assets, to put it that way. So that's one problem. So you were if you play a back four with those two, you probably had to deal with a lot of dangerous runs from Bayern wingers behind them. So he was probably concerned about that. Ter Stegen was probably also concerned about having to deal with Lewandowski, who right now might be the most effective player in the world in the box. So you could use one more man to defend that. So I think that is kind of the basis for that three at the back. One, you have three guys in the box fighting against Lewandowski. And two, you have a bit more protection for your wingbacks in case Sané and Coman try to make runs.
Sure. So pretty logical, as you point out. The game starts and we see two Dortmund goals inside the first 7 minutes. The first one is a pattern we saw often, by the way. Dortmund goalkeeper, this happens in the second minute, sends a long ball to the right. Meunier, being Meunier, does not really know what to do and just punts it in the general direction of Haaland. Haaland controls it, turns, takes a shot from about 20 yards, and it off of Boateng, it goes into the far corner, 1-0 in the second minute. Okay, fun start.
Yeah, that's something that none of us really saw coming. In terms of pressing, what I found interesting is that the way Dortmund were pressing is not that different from how they press when they have a 4-2-3-1 or a 4-3-3. Because a lot of the time when they do that kind of pressing, the six was staying back anyways. Here, what happened is that instead of having a six staying back with the center backs, they just had a back three. So that was kind of the main difference. But in the 4-2-3-1 or 4-3-3, they also press very similar to how they did today. They send two midfielders out of press, three forwards out of press. So they were pressing in the opposition territory with those five players. To be honest, I don't think Dortmund are particularly good at pressing, nor do I think that they are good. Like, I don't think their pressing leads to any good chances on a regular.
I'll be a bit more blunt, Jose, and sorry for interrupting, but it looks unorganized. I'm not sure, you know, especially when Bayern set out to build up from the back with three, with Süle next to Boateng and Alaba, you can just do a 3-versus-3 up front and it's not that hard, but it didn't look like they knew what they were doing all the time when pressing.
Yeah, and especially, I think in the big games, also Dortmund have this approach that's, because against kind of, I don't like to use the word, but lesser opponents, they usually press more aggressively. But in these cases, against bigger opposition, they take this approach of being a bit more conservative. And what that often ends up happening is that you end up with players in situations in which they don't know whether to press, whether to stay back. And that does lead to some defensive disorganization. The funny thing is that independently of whether the pressing was working or not, Dortmund was still kind of got a second goal because, and it's interesting that it's similar mechanisms. It also started the next goal, the second goal, kind of started from a goal kick too. It's a goal kick, Bayern lose the second ball. They try to get it back from Dortmund, but then Daoud sends this beautiful diagonal ball that basically takes out like five Bayern players out of the game. And then Schultz has a lot of space on the other side of the pitch, has a lot of space to run into, pass into space for Hazard, who destroys Süle in the run. Then Haaland is also destroying Boateng in the run, and he's the one who gets the goal. So without being that great, it's 2-0 for Dortmund.
Yeah, and I have a couple of points on that goal, Jose. One, I think the first goal from Haaland was just a shot from distance. But with the benefit of hindsight, we can say that the second goal Dortmund scored was actually their biggest chance of the match and maybe the only big chance they created. That's one. The second thing is more of a question, but if you're a coach, do you blame Leroy Sané for not tracking back fast enough in the left back? Is it just a fantastic ball from Daoud? Like, what's your view on that?
Certainly, Sané being more active about his defending could have prevented this. I still think it is, for the most part, a really, really, really good ball from Daoud. But it is true that it was a bit weird that Schulz has a lot of space to run into. And it's not, and I remember that if you see that on camera, it's not like you saw like Sané running after him. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, but he did when the ball was played. And then he realized at that moment he was already too late. So, yeah. Okay. Anyways, Dortmund up after 9 minutes, 2 goals. Fun, Jose. Really something I was cheering for because I was kind of expecting Bayern to crush them early. So that was a lot of fun. And if we can take away something tactically from the first 15 minutes, for me, it's just the case that if you have like a great, great striker like Haaland, you called him a cyborg, but I will just say one of the best strikers in the world and unbelievable. It can really simplify your tactics because what he did was just sending long balls to them and optimizing shots for him. And yeah, Haaland was so superior to Boateng in the 1-on-1 duel that it worked out for them in the first 15 minutes.
Yeah, we had a similar discussion last time with Inter. It's like
Lukaku. Yeah,
it's a bit simple that they just send the long ball to Lukaku, but when Lukaku is so superior to his defender, it makes sense. Similar thing here. Like if Haaland is so superior to his defender, then you send the long ball to Haaland and it makes sense. You can't blame them for doing that. We have to say that generally, yeah, Dortmund did not care about playing through the Bayern press. For the most part, it was long ball to Haaland, or another one that they like to do is that approach of sending the goal kick to see if he could beat like Davis or Coman in the aerial duel.
Yeah, sorry, I was grinning through what you said. Indeed, the goal kick sent to Meunier, and then he tried to play the 1-on-1 aerial duel with either Bayern's left back Davies or with his left forward Coman. Sorry for talking through you there. So after the first 15 minutes, the game calms down. You get a bit of a slower tempo. And I think we saw Bayern finding a bit more solutions against Dortmund's defense.
Agreed. And I think the most important component there was Bayern started the game kind of with Süle, Boateng and Alaba trying to build from the back. Then as the game went on, you started seeing more participation from the midfielders during build-up. So you started seeing Kimmich and Goretzka playing a bit deeper. And what happened there is that Dortmund midfielders started following them. So when they had the ball, you had Delaney and Daoud trying to rush forward to press them. When they did that, they left the space behind them. And that's usually when like Müller or one of the wingers from Bayern who started playing more on the inside, they were there to receive the ball. And then that was kind of the easy progression avenue for Bayern. Yeah, then the ball got to that Bayern attacker. That Bayern attacker flicked it like to a player on the wing, usually the fullback. And that was basically Bayern's ball progression after the 15th minute. And that's how they found, like, that's usually how they got into the final third pretty easily. Like, they had, after the 15th minute or so, they had relatively little trouble going through Dortmund's defensive block.
And here I have problems with Dortmund's defensive plan at that point, because even though you've scored 2 goals, I think they were too easy with conceding the space. And I think, you know just as well as I do, that they cannot defend against this Bayern for, what is it, 80 minutes, 85 minutes in a deep 5-for-1. You know Bayern is too good for that offensively. So I thought they should have been more proactive with their pressing and trying to keep Bayern out of the box instead of defending in the box.
Yeah, and it's not like, apart from maybe Hummels, it's not like Dortmund has the best personnel in the world to, like, they're not Atletico. They don't have exactly the best personnel in the world to defend inside the box anyway.
No, they played with a midfielder, Hummels, who's basically a midfielder too, let's be honest, and Zagadou, who's okay. So
yeah, so that was a problem. They also were struggling to counterattack in this situation because once they shift over to the 5-4-1 block, you basically have Reus and Assad basically very much out wide trying to support their wing back and trying to prove. And from that position, it's usually, they're kind of isolated. It's harder for them to start counterattacks. When you had the situations in the first 10 minutes, they were usually playing a bit more centrally, and it was easier for them to get the ball, get it to Alan, start counterattacks. You had more players in central areas. Here, it was just really difficult for them to even get a counterattacking situation. Mm-hmm. So after those first two shots in the first 10 minutes that led to the goal, Dortmund really didn't have anything else throughout the first half.
Well, they did have one moment after 25 minutes, Jose. Basically, a moment that could have decided the match. They had a pretty good counterattack. And yeah, I'm sorry, but once again, Meunier kind of made a very wrong decision because he could have squared the ball to Haaland, set him up for a hat-trick, but he didn't. He completely missed the pass. And that was another good Dahoud pass to the wingback, by the way. But Meunier really missed, I'm not going to say an easy assist, but he should have done better. Let's keep it on that. And 1 minute later, Lewandowski scores the 1-2. So that was such a crucial moment. And yeah, I'm not going to say it every week, but I'm also not going to say, oh, fine margins, cliche or whatever. But that just goes to show you that that little piece of quality from Meunier could have decided the match. Doesn't do it. And on the other side, Lewandowski scores the 1-2. Tell me a bit about that goal.
Yes. So that Lewandowski goal is actually a good example of what was, I think, the most impactful individual matchup in the attack for Bayern, which was Sané against Schultz, which is a matchup that went pretty badly for Schultz. It was a problem throughout the entire game because Sané could manage to run behind him a lot of the time, but most importantly, when he ran at Schultz, he was also pretty good at beating him. He had a very similar dribble to the one that led to that first goal. He had a similar dribble around the 21st minute. That was kind of the warning shot. 26 minutes, say exactly the same kind of dribble. Said, and that pass from Sané this time did reach Lewandowski, and that's a goal. And I would say that, especially in the first half, I would say throughout the game, like, the most impactful winger for Bayern was Sané. He was the guy who was creating the most danger, partly because he was doing well and partly because he had that favorable matchup against Schultz.
Yeah, so Bayern get their Anschlusstor, which is German for goal that you score when you make the deficit from 2-1. And Jose, I was looking for the word in English, but I could not find it. Is there a word like that when you go from two goals difference to one? I don't think so, is there? Okay, well, I'll just teach the people listening some German then. They get an Anschlusstor, the goal that gets them back into the match. And after that, Bayern are really lively. They get a bit more from Sané, but nothing really concrete. And then in the 42nd minute, we get something that's very good about the rules of football and something that's very bad about the rules of football. I'll explain that vague intro a bit more. We get in the 42nd minute, Coman, who goes into Dahoud, gets a foul in the box, and the referee initially misses it, but he goes to VAR, and then a penalty is given. And two things about this, Jose. One, Coman was dribbling outside of the box. He was in the box, made a dribble outside of the box, and Dahoud made a foul on him. First of all, Dahoud should not even make a challenge there, because the risk-reward situation is so bad. Like, the biggest reward you get is winning the ball back, okay? But the risk you take is that you concede a penalty. So first of all, bad place for a tackle if Coman is dribbling outside of the box in the first place. That being said, the referee misses it. And for me, it's a great use so far that in one of the biggest games of the Bundesliga season, potentially title deciding, we get technical help so that this referee who missed this moment can rectify his mistake and we get to see a penalty kick. And the third thing is me ranting about the penalty rule in its current form, because as I said earlier, this was in no shape or form a very dangerous situation. It was in no shape or form a foul that should be rewarded with a very big chance to score like a penalty kick. And I really like the use of VAR in these situations, but I really hate the penalty rule in its current form, because yeah, this just doesn't make sense to me.
That's actually something I'd never thought about now that I'm trying to think of any better alternative to the penalty rule in that sense.
I'm not sure. Maybe make the penalty area smaller, go for indirect free kicks if the situation is not dangerous at all. But this is a foul by a Dortmund player in the corner of the box, the Bayern player goes outside of the box, and it's still a foul. Like it's a clear foul, and the VAR pointed that out. But the reward is so big that you get for just a silly foul, actually.
Well, for now, I'll have to leave it at it is what it is. And yes, that's a foul that, like you mentioned, if you're Daoud, you don't commit it.
Yeah, it is what it is. That's true. Anyways, Lewandowski gets to take the penalty kick. You know what happens next. He scores it. We are level at halftime. And I was a bit shocked to see the shot statistics, actually, Jose, because it was 14 shots against 2 from Dortmund, which in itself is pretty dominant. But 12 of the 14 shots of Bayern were inside the box. So in the end, we can say Dortmund kind of optimized for in-the-box defending. And then they concede 12 shots of Bayern inside the box. Yeah, that's not good.
That's not good. And it's just, I keep trying to think about this. I keep trying to think, what kind of defending is this Dortmund team good for? Like, their personnel are not great for a pressing side. Their personnel is also not great for defending deep. And this is something that the moment Dortmund got their 2 goals in and they start defending in a deep block, like from the 10th or 15th minute, I could just, I think we all kind of saw, yeah, Bayern are going to score like 2 to 3 goals at least out of this, because it doesn't look like a very stable defensive structure.
And don't tell us hindsight bias, because we said this at halftime or earlier. We said Bayern was going to score 3 or 4 goals.
Yes, I think both you and I kind of agree, like around the 15th minute, that yeah, the Bayern is going to get a lot of goals in. This doesn't seem...
We should start betting, because I never bet on it when I get it correct. And when I bet, I don't... Yeah. Anyways, let's not walk that side path. Second half begins, Jose, and Terzic made some slight tactical adjustments. What did you see?
So the main thing that I saw for the second half is that in the first half, the midfielders, so Daoud and Delaney, were jumping on the Bayern midfielders whenever they were dropping deep.
Sorry to interrupt, but the technical term, jumping, what does that mean?
Oh, like they were just tracking the Bayern midfielders when they decided, when they dropped deep. So they went forward, and that left the space behind the Dortmund midfielders, which is something that Bayern took advantage of during the first half. In the second half, we stopped seeing that kind of behavior. So whenever Goretzka and Kimmich dropped deeper, the Dortmund midfielders were not following them. And that meant that Dortmund's defensive block was actually a compact 5-4-1. And it was more difficult, even though Kimmich and Goretzka were not being pressed as aggressively as before, they actually had more trouble getting a pass, getting a forward pass, because the passing lanes were better covered by Dortmund players. And even if a Bayern player got to receive the ball, they just had less space to operate in. So basically, Dortmund fixed their defensive structure during the second half. And that, quite honestly, led to a very boring section of the game between the 45th and 70th minute.
Yeah, I think this was the only phase in the game where Dortmund had some kind of defensive control. Like, they were not getting out of their 5-4-1 defensive block. They were not doing anything on the counterattack. They had one okay chance 2 minutes after halftime from a counterattack, but that was the only thing. But for me, this was the only time they had some kind of defensive stuff going on that was good. And I can't recall any really big Bayern chances in this moment.
No, generally not much happened in those first 25 minutes of the second half, except for a few substitutions, Alan's injury.
I do like to point out that Bayern did have control of the match, because they kept Dortmund in a low block and Dortmund couldn't get out. But in terms of penalty area action, not a lot. So some subs, you said?
Yes. So for this one, there were, honestly, the only news that we can give about those first 25 minutes of the second half is substitutions, basically. So around the 60th minute, so there were, Alan had his injury problems. They wanted to take him out earlier because they don't want to risk him for the upcoming game against Sevilla for Champions League. So what we had at the 59th minute was Alan and Asak go out, and in go the striker Tigges and Julian Brandt. Then afterwards, at the 66th minute, we have Gnabry coming in, Coman going out. 70th minute, we have Boateng leaving with an injury. Javi Martinez goes in. And then finally, we have another change this time from Dortmund, where right wing back in this case, Mateu Morey and Bellingham go in, and Delaney and Sagado go out. That kind of leads to a rearrangement of Dortmund's defensive line. So now I get to talk a bit more about tactics. Meunier is the right center back, Hummels in the center, and Rechan as the left center back. And I give you all of the substitutions because that's all we can talk about until the 70th minute. Afterwards, the game gets lively again.
Yeah, I think Bayern really chased the game in that last 20 minutes. They didn't want to lose. I saw Goretzka and Kimmich playing like structurally more attacking. Goretzka, of course, being almost the third striker at times, not only when they were crossing the ball into the box, but also when they were building up. So I think that's kind of what set their winner up late. But some stats again, and I'm sorry that we regress to mentioning shots all the time, but once again, very impressive. Bayern get off 10 shots in the last 20 minutes. So that tells you something about how they were able to create so much.
Yes, and the mechanisms to me are, to be honest, a bit simple. I didn't think this was a great game from Bayern when it comes to breaking down a deep block. It's a bit of a brute force crossing strategy, but we go back to the point of simplifying tactics. When you have one of the most effective players in the box right now, or maybe the most effective player in the box right now with Lewandowski, just get the ball into the box and he will get one of them. So it is simple, but it is something that makes sense. The other good thing in those last 20 minutes, Gnabry had, as usual, tends to be a very mobile and intelligent player. So he doesn't like to stay put on one wing because during the first half, Bayern's attack, when Gnabry's there, tends to be a bit more mobile. Without him, it was less dynamic and it was more both Coman and Sané staying on their respective wings. With Gnabry, then you start getting more mobility. You start seeing Müller showing up in more places. Gnabry starts showing up in more places. And of course, that is useful when you want to disorder your opponent. So that was kind of the boost that Bayern's attack got in the last 20 minutes and that I think made them a bit more dynamic.
Yeah, would be fun to see your team talk, Jose, for Bayern, that you go and stand in front of the guys. Okay, just get the ball into the box and Lewandowski will do the rest.
It would be funny to see what exactly do they say in those cases.
If we would do that as two stats nerds, they would be like, who are these two guys? But if like a club legend would do it, they would be, oh yeah, that's a good approach. Anyways, yeah, Bayern chasing the win, Dortmund having the shit season they have. We all know how this ends, right? Like, in the end, you always know how it ends, but you keep watching.
Yeah, there was still a bit of hope, but the other thing is that it was a deserved goal. Like, Bayern deserved to get a third or a fourth goal. They had done enough to get it. So, in the end, yes, when they get an 89th or 90th minute goals, As painful as it can be for the opposition, it is kind of deserved. And in the end, it's the approach they had been trying all game. So Müller attempts a cross into the box. That gets cleared. Goretzka picks second ball. Shot from outside the box into the goal. And then a minute later, you have Lewandowski basically sentencing the game with another shot from outside the box. Game over.
Yeah. So was actually game over at the time. And I do like to point out, for the last time we use a stat that's called shot. Sorry, but they just tell a lot sometimes, that Dortmund in the second half had two shots. One was that Hazard chance, which was in the 48th minute or something, not a big chance at all. And one was a shot from 50 yards, from like 2 yards from the halfway line, from the guy that came in. Tigges is his name. He came in for Haaland. And I'm honest, Jose, I watch a lot of football. You watch a lot of football too. But I think the substitution from Haaland to Tigges is one of the biggest drop-offs I've ever seen in one substitution. Because Haaland is Haaland and Tigges has never scored a Bundesliga goal in his career.
So there's that. I mean, for Dortmund, offensively, things pretty much shut down after the Haaland substitution because, especially in the absence of Sancho, the counterattack is Haaland, and without him, that was basically it.
Yeah, I do see now online that this guy, Tigges, has only played 50 Bundesliga minutes, and he had a lot of goals at the regional level, which is youth level in Germany. So, okay, maybe he'll be good in the future, but not now. Sorry if any Tigges fans are listening to this and feel offended. Anyways, takeaways. Yeah, for me, not Bayern's most brilliant collective game, but if you have a Lewandowski in this form, 30 goals from 23 Bundesliga matches, brilliant hold-up play, brilliant in setting up others. He does a lot of work off the ball. He does a lot of work in pressing. I'll say one other thing. He's never injured. I think that's one of the things that's overlooked. He's never injured. They don't even have a second striker because he's never injured. In the form of his life, and if they do give out a Ballon d'Or, a Golden Ball this year, it really should go to him, obviously. Man, I don't see another player who should get it.
It's so tiring to talk about like Ballon d'Or kind of stuff.
Oh, sorry. You are, of course, a Madrid perspective. It's always the Messi-Ronaldo discourse that's really boring. I know, Charlie.
No, but well, at least it's more fun that somebody that's not Messi or Ronaldo gets to win it. So that's a good thing. And it's still interesting that this guy already won an award for being the best player in the planet, and he's having an even bigger season now. So,
yeah, and he's now the player that has scored the most goals against Dortmund in Bundesliga history, against his former team. Did you know that?
That's cruel.
Yeah. So, anyways, do you want to talk Bayern? Do you want to talk Dortmund? Talk me through this. How do you want to tackle this?
Yeah, so as far as takeaways, I will still say that, before Bayern fans will kill me, that's okay. As far as team structure comes, I don't think Bayern are the best team in Germany. I do think they are the team with the most talent, and they have so much talent that I would expect them to win the league, and I still think I expect them to win the league, but as a collective structure, as a team, I do think Leipzig are the best team in Germany.
Yeah, and something to add to that, I think Leipzig will be knocked out by Liverpool, and I think Bayern will progress against Lazio. So Bayern have two more midweek games. It's only 10 games left. They play 34 in Germany. They have 24 played now, so it's only 10 games left. Who knows? Who knows? It would be really fun. I really hope it. I hope I root against every team that has monopolized the championship, whether it's Juve or whether it's a PSG or whether it's Bayern. So I root for the number two immediately. I think it's healthy. I think we need competitive balance in European football. But I don't think it will happen. I think it will be Bayern again. Sorry, cold take.
Yep. And then as far as Dortmund, again, this is kind of a transition period for them.
I hope they get Champions League football, honestly. I think we will look very surprised. Sorry, I interrupted you after three words. But I think we will be very surprised if we look back on this Dortmund team in 5-6 years and we see that they missed out on Champions League football potentially, with Haaland and Sancho, who will be among the best players in the world by that time, I think. We will look back on it and think, what the hell happened there?
Mm-hmm. Well, and we will see if they are still in Dortmund by the summer. Again, there might be some rebuilding to do, depending on whether they leave or not over the summer. I do look forward to see what Rose and company can do with this squad, because of course there's talent, but yeah, there's a bit of training and probably a couple more defensive signings to make to really turn this into a much better defensive team and a much more cohesive team than what it is right now. This, yeah, I have to say the result and the fact that this had to get resolved in the final minutes of the game is a bit flattering for Dortmund considering what they did throughout the game.
Yeah, and that Dortmund, they really need that Champions League football, because not only to keep Haaland, to keep Sancho, to keep other players, but also financially. I was headline reading. I have not looked into it, but I think they had a pretty hefty financial loss as well. And to get first the coronavirus bump and then you don't get Champions League football, then I think they take a pretty big financial hit. So potentially some very big months coming up. 10 games left, they pretty much need the Champions League football.
Yes, but if they get Champions League football, then maybe that means that Peter Bosz and Leverkusen don't get Champions League football, and you would be sad if that happens.
Yeah, I think Peter Bosz should focus on winning against young boys from Switzerland. And if he does that, I will root for him a bit more.
Which they didn't.
No. Did you catch Wolfsburg? Any Wolfsburg footage you've seen?
Actually, no. I haven't had too much time to watch.
Ugly football, but really effective. They're doing really well. They have a shot at getting Champions League.
Yes. So we'll see what happens with both the Bundesliga title race, with the Bundesliga race for Champions League spots. Just like all of the other leagues, it is kind of fun that this year all the big five leagues are kind of competitive and you have like more unexpected things happening. You have a bit more competition there, except maybe Premier League where City will win. But generally, it seems that the title races are a bit more lively this year. And that is a good thing.
Right. So I will just cap that off by thanking you, Jose, for another immaculate analysis. Thanking the listener and wishing you good luck, Jose, with the derby tomorrow between Atletico Madrid and Real Madrid.
I am not watching that. Those games are... like, I am going to preview the game. I'm going to try to predict how it's going to turn out tactically. I am not going to watch it. I have self-love. Yeah.
We didn't pick it because it was technically always boring the last few seasons.
I think especially like since Zidane is coach, like every Zidane versus Simeone duel has been kind of boring.
Yeah. So good luck with that. And listener, we will be back next week. So thanks so much for listening and we will be back.
Thanks for having me, Eric. Thanks everyone for listening. See you around.